Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's November 29th, 2011. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43, joined tonight by the room full of hosts. We got Dave Rodder from Blind Tiger, Garrett Oliver from Brooklyn Brewery, and Seth from Beer Nation. How are you guys?
Excellent.
We are good.
Yeah. This is an awesome group of beer guys. We're sponsored by GreatBrewers.com. Check out Beer Cloud if you want to learn more about beer. GreatBrewers.com brings the American beer community together. And also supported by the people at the Good Beer Seal, an association of 34 New York City beer bars. GoodBeerSeal.com. So look at the people in this room. We got Dave Broderick, Blind Tiger, Garrett Oliver, Brooklyn Brewery, and Seth.
You already forgot Seth? Good Lord.
Right from Beer Nation.
We have a quorum. Great things shall be decided today.
Well, here we are. Thanksgiving's over. You know
what I've decided? No tax cuts for the wealthy. That's what we've decided today. That we're only getting started.
That's an important decision.
Beer for the people, no tax cuts for the wealthy.
I like it. That's a slogan. I think you can run for something on that.
Does anyone have
somebody has to
Occupy Beer? Is anyone using that?
Occupy. I'm sure there are many people occupying beer.
I saw this morning on I was leaving Vermont from Dartmouth College on the bus, and I looked out, and there was Occupy Dartmouth. Was one little plastic tent. And nobody in it.
And it was on fire.
Nobody home, exactly.
Yeah.
It's very sad.
Oh, yeah. So, Garrett, you're back.
I am back.
You've been on the book tour of a lifetime. Huh?
Yeah, it's been pretty crazy. You know, started off September 27th, judging Great American Beer Festival for my 20th year. And then, Denver, Boulder, San Francisco, Minneapolis, Seattle, Chicago, Cleveland, a bunch of places in Florida. Then in the UK, I was over in London, Burton, Oxford, Manchester, and Leeds. And now I'm back. Wow. And there were a few other places in between. But it's been great. The book's gone through 4 printings already in 9 weeks. And they're sold out again. And we're printing again.
Well, before we talk too much about the book, because there's a couple chapters I want to ask you about, I want to talk about this beer that we're drinking. It's the Ama. What's the full name?
This is called Ama Bionda, and this is kind of a brand new thing for us because we were the first brewery in the United States to do collaborations. You know, by a pretty long way. You know, and for a long time, it was actually kind of our calling card. It was a thing that was particularly Brooklyn, and then it became something which everybody did, which is great. But we stopped kind of doing that a few years ago. But as we were doing that, we started to do some quiet things over in Italy, where we have a lot of connections. I used to work with Slow Food over there. I go on vacation for a couple of weeks every year in Italy. And we got to know the people from the Amarcord Brewery, which is about an hour out of Rimini, off the east coast of Italy, a couple hours south of Venice. They're up in the mountains, in the Marche, actually. And so we got to know these guys. We did a couple of special projects with them. And to make a long story short, we came up with the idea of creating a whole range of beers that are aimed specifically at regional Italian cuisine. And so there are actually 3. Bionda is the first of them. There's also Bruna and Mora, which are actually available now in Italy. But we're starting off here just with Ama Bionda, which could be considered kind of almost like a light saison. It has a large inclusion of Sicilian wildflower honey, and it's about 5.8%, but has a lot of flavor, re-fermentation in the bottle, and very dry, but soft, but a lot going on.
Yeah, a few weeks ago, we started getting it from Brooklyn, and I described it as, I didn't quite know how to describe it, but to me it was positive, and I said, Italian-style aromatic beer.
I like it, and the great thing about that is it sounds so much better in Italian. Birra aromatico di Apecchio. So yeah, we brew it over there in Apecchio, Italy. And so our friends are actually, it's my recipes and procedures, but then our friends are exporting it to us. So it's, yeah, it's a lot of fun. And, you know, we're kind of getting the beer out there right now. But, we've never done anything, and even this time we haven't done anything where we did a focus group or we thought about, but we never thought about what the market for a beer would be. We just make the beers and we put them out there. In this case, the beers are actually designed around the food. So we're thinking about, okay, we're starting off a meal. You have antipasti. You might have some salad. You might have some cream-based pastas at the beginning of the meal. You might have delicate fish, things like that. And this would be, you know, the beer that is aperitif, goes across the board through pizzas and whatever else, and is the broadest based of them. You know, and then from there they get into some other flavors.
Dave, you've been thinking more along those lines too, haven't you? About food and beer pairing.
Yeah, exactly. And trying to figure out what goes with what, and obviously I often refer to Garrett's book, Brewmaster's Table, his book before this last one, and I'm actually kind of wondering that you mentioned the next two. What kind of dishes were you going to be pairing those with?
Well, the Bruna is basically a beer which is more or less patterned after an old school Belgian double. And to be honest, it's the one that has the least sort of Italian basis to it, because I was really thinking about the sets of foods. Not, okay, can we get something Italian, in there? So this is all about that caramelized flavor from, the candy sugar syrup, et cetera, and really grabbing onto the flavors of fried, grilled, roasted, browned in any way, shape, or form, whatever. So if this is sort of the beginning of the meal with a Bionda, if you're moving on to, say, meat dishes or even grilled vegetables and fish, et cetera, the Bruna would be the one for that. And then finally, the Mora, which is a strong porter at 9%, with a large infusion of espresso coffee from the Pascucci roasters, who are only a few kilometers away from the brewery in Apecchio. So we spent a full day there with the guys, going over the roasting and doing blends and whatever else. And it was pretty cool. I learned a lot about coffee. We actually applied the techniques that we learned doing our intensified coffee stout here with Stumptown Coffee Roasters with their Finca El Injerto, and used that same technique using the espresso coffee over there and infusing that into this beer. And that's more desserts and after dinner, and of course Cuban cigars.
So would you describe the Italian beer scene as sort of like softer, more food friendly Belgian style ales? That's what I've been sort of getting from there.
Well, they're certainly thinking about their food traditions as they get into beer. When I judged Pianeta Birra, which is like their version of, it's like a great Italian beer festival, a couple of years ago, it was interesting to see they had a chestnut beer category. There were 22 chestnut beers, because chestnuts, we don't think of chestnuts here as Italian, but to Italians, chestnuts are really Italian, especially in certain regions where they make chestnut flour, chestnut honey, chestnut pasta, chestnut everything. So they are really taking their wine traditions and their food traditions and translating them into the beer. And they have, I think, in many ways, one of the most exciting beer cultures in the world, 350 breweries. Now, there are some great ones and some that aren't so great, because, the Italians, well, a lot is about la bella figura. You want to look good and you want to be fast, and you want to be sleek. You might not live, but you will look good while you're doing it. And so, you know, the a lot of the Italian breweries remind me of that story I saw on some program about the Italian battleship. It was white, and it was the most beautiful battleship, the fastest battleship of World War II. Unfortunately, it was fast the because it had no armor.
The easiest one to see.
You know, it was easy to see.
So, as you open it up, the other day in the Post, New York Post, there was a story by the – who's the Prime Minister of Italy who's stepping down.
Well, it was Berlusconi. It was Berlusconi.
Berlusconi stepping down. His mistress wrote a little. His previous mistress wrote. She said, "After you've been in bed with the Prime Minister of Italy, there's nothing. You know, there's nothing."
Are you sure? He didn't write that?
But it reminds me of that only because a lot of the Italian brewers want to do a beer with 15 ingredients before they even learn to make Pilsner or Pale Ale. But that's what makes the scene really exciting. And as they get better at it, they're going to be the most creative guys in the world because they're just on fire.
Yeah, they're not afraid.
They're not afraid of anything.
Yep.
You know, including failure. So,
right, exactly.
I'm
going
like, to bring in Seth here because Seth, I always stumble over your last name because I know quite a few Seths in the world. And you're Seth Wright.
Yes.
But I was thinking
he's the right Seth.
You're
right
Beer one. Nation TV. That's I think of you as Beer Nation TV.
Yeah, Beer Nation Show. Well, I was just thinking about the Italians and how long is this? 350 breweries seems like a lot, but I mean, they have a culture of alcohol for way back.
Oh, yeah.
Is this like a new thing, or are we just sort of like, I know that's coming out here in America. Is that like a really a new thing, or?
It's pretty new. It's pretty new. The last 10 years. One thing I find interesting, and this is only my own theory, but I have a feeling that one of the reasons why craft beer is so big in Italy is because what you find is that Italian younger people have nowhere to go. You know, there is not an Italian drinking culture. There are not bars. There are cafes, more or less. There are places where you could drink, but there's not. You don't walk into a place and see that it's all like 20 somethings. So when you go out and you're in a not in that big a town, the place that you go out, your parents will also be there, and your grandparents will be there too, and so you never ever get away from your family. And craft beer, in a way, provides people a craft beer bar, a place like Beer and Food, for example, in Rome, you know, or they have a cool place across the street from there. You go and you're going to see, you know, basically you and your friends and the people that, you know, you want to be hanging out with, not your parents. And I think, in a way, for them, beer is rock and roll.
Have you been to a place in Rome called Johnny's Off License?
Yes, actually, yeah. I have.
He's an interesting guy. He's one of the. I met him here a few years ago. He makes a point of coming to the States and really learning a lot about American craft beer.
Yeah, well, I mean, the United States is kind of the the beacon in the world now for people who are looking to do stuff that's interesting. I mean, we even have groups of Germans coming over, kind of learning, what is this mocho you have been talking about? We don't know about it, but they have obviously such a great beer culture in Europe, and in many ways, I think that. In the United States, sometimes we appreciate it more than they do at
home. Johnny's Off License, I've met him. He's an Irish guy who owns a beer and wine store in Rome. And he knows, we in the States, there's certain specialty imports we know, certain Belgian and German beers. He knows all those. He knows the Sheldon Brothers beers, the B United beers, all the real limited small beers. But then he knows all of the great American craft beers from every region. And this guy, I mean, he must know more than any of us in this room.
You have a few guys like that out there.
Especially the Europeans.
Cassio Piccolo from São Paulo in Brazil. You've got Steve Huxley, who runs a cerveteria in Barcelona, Spain. You know, you have these guys Cassio is Brazilian, but often from other countries who've set up shop sometimes 15, 20 years ago, and they've been all alone, for a long, long time.
You know,
and just now things are starting to pop.
That makes me wonder, you hear about how tough it is to start a business in Italy. Especially for the young. And so what have you, you've got 350 new breweries. That's a lot in a country that supposedly it's like tons of red tape. And you think with alcohol, there would be plenty.
Yeah.
So how are they doing it? I mean, how are they, That seems like it's got to be one of the fastest, if only, growing industries in Italy right now.
It's true. You know, I hadn't thought about you know, the difficulty, and the Italian red tape is quite famous. You know, but I think that it is one thing that drives people to do it as well. Not just the passion of doing it, but also the fact that, you know, you don't know anybody else who's doing it except for maybe a few of your friends. You can get away from everything, everybody, every tradition, and run and be your own man. And I think that in Italy, that means almost more than we can imagine, you know, because it's very hard to be your own person there.
Right.
Is there like a homebrew scene there? Because that's usually like where people like have these hobbies and they really want to go out and do that. And that's where the explosion happens. Like in the 80s and the 90s, it was like everyone was doing their own and people loved it. And they were like, dude, you should open your own brewery, man. And that doesn't really work for restaurants all the time. But, you know, if you brew good beer, you could, you know, have a good shot 20 years ago to open it up.
Well, in Italy, the runway is really short, you know, so yeah. You know, you get that thing up to 40 miles an hour and you take off.
They brew,
you know,
they brew like, one batch of that. Yeah, like, okay,
exactly. I'm ready.
Well, okay.
No, it's definitely true. But, you know, I have to say it's a beautiful thing to watch. And right now at the brewery, we got a friend of ours with us, a guy named Emanuele Onetto. He and his family have a tremendous restaurant up in the mountains near in Rapallo, right near Portofino. Great place that I found maybe 10 years ago through Slow Food. And he and his family just have the most beautiful, tremendous place. And he came over here yesterday saying, I want to learn about what you guys are doing here with beer because I want to be a brewer. So he's going to spend a week with us, and then he's going to spend a week in the kitchen at Maialino with Chef Nick Anderer. You know, kind of learning his way around an American Italian kitchen or a Roman New York kitchen or whatever you want to think of it, and go back and bring some of these things back. And I hope one of these days you're going to see him open up the first brew pub, you know, on the Ligurian coast.
Hey, let's do a start a little chant before we take our break. Let's everyone go. I'm a ch-ch, bionda, ch-ch, I'm a ch-ch.
This is a bionda. Soccer thing?
Yeah. I'm a
Should
bionda.
We light something on fire?
We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
I'm a donna. Che fine amo.
My baby jumped up this morning and sat on the side of the bed. He said, I'm leaving you, baby. And this is just what I said, I can't make you stay if you want to go, but it's high time, baby, that you should know. One monkey don't stop no show. One monkey don't stop no show. So if you still want to go, go ahead. And I mean every word I said. My baby thought I was jiving, and he went right out the door. He left me about 3 in the morning. I got me a man at 4. Some women cry when a man leave them dry long slow, but I found out something long time ago.
All right, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. What's our chant, guys?
Bionda.
I'm a Bionda. That new beer from Brooklyn Brewery that we're digging right now.
It's actually from Aricord Brewery, but I helped.
So, I'm a Cord Brewery in Italy. All right, we're here with Dave Broderick from Blind Tiger, Seth Wright from Beer Nation TV show, and Garrett Oliver from Brooklyn. We're going to have our call-in from Anchorage, Alaska, Gabe Fletcher from Anchorage Brewing. Are you on the line, Gabe?
Yeah, I'm here. Hi, guys.
How are you, man?
Hey, Gabe.
Doing great.
How goes?
Well, you found the surefire way to get to New York City. You have the hardest to get beer ever. In fact, we couldn't even get a sample. We had to go to New Beer, which is a great little beer store in Manhattan on Christie Street. New Beer distributor. He gave us a couple bottles for the show.
Cool. What'd you end up with?
He only had the Whiteout Wit beer.
But I have to say, I saw the Bitter Monk up in Vermont, of all places, in Montpelier. So,
yeah, that's actually where I'm from. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah, all my family, they live up in Burlington area and stuff like that. So, and actually, Sean from the Hill Farmstead is the one that's distributing it for me there from the brothers.
That's funny because I was with Sean on Friday, and he said that you guys had talked and maybe he was going to fly out at some point. and do it.
We're talking about maybe doing that this summer, so there could be a little collaboration in the works there.
Hey, Gabe, how did you get started in brewing?
Well, when I was 21, I've always been into, like, you know, ever since I got out of high school or whatever, I was into drinking, you know, different stuff and trying different beers and stuff. And then as soon as I turned 21, got into it more, and I started working at this little winery place up here for just a few months. And then I got a call from Midnight Sun, and they had just kind of started, and they were looking for help. So, you know, I didn't even ask for the job or apply for it or anything. And, you know, that day I was on the bottling line there, and then within a year and a half I was head brewer there, and then just kind of took the brand to kind of where it's at now. And so I was there for 13 years before I left to start this.
Dave, have you had Midnight Sun beers?
Oh yeah, quite a few times.
This is my first beer from Alaska.
Really? Yeah, and this is actually my, because I haven't cracked, I did buy the Bitter Monk, I haven't cracked it yet though, so I'm looking forward to that when I get home.
I actually have a pretty good, I have a Midnight Sun story. You know, so this is maybe 6-7 years ago, could be as long as 8 years ago, and I'm judging Great American Beer Festival, and we had a category, and I believe it was a new category at the time, and you know, I'm trying to remember whether it was called experimental, I believe that it was. There was a beer there that was flavored with, among other things, lemongrass and mint. The judges around the table were kind of up in arms, like, this is very strange. How dare they put lemongrass and mint, you know, into the beer? But it had such a beautiful balance to it. It all worked together, et cetera. And I actually, you know, I made an argument, you know, at the table. It's like, well, you guys asked for experimental, daring use of spices, ingredients, whatever else. Well, here it is, and you're telling me you can't handle it? And it ended up winning a gold medal, and I found out, of course, only later what it was, and it was Mountain Sun, who always, you know, had kind of pushed the envelope in a way that was, you know, that was always interesting. And, you know, as they say in Spinal Tap, you know, it's a fine line between clever and stupid. And Mountain Sun was always on the right side.
You're talking about a different brewery.
was it Mountain Sun? No, it was
Midnight.
Alaska.
Midnight Sun.
Midnight Sun.
Is there also a Mountain Sun?
Mountain Sun is in Colorado.
That's good. I think maybe it was Midnight Sun. Maybe I'm wrong.
See, Gabe, now you're a real New Yorker, because you know what? We talk like this all the time.
Yeah, and you just have to like butt in.
So you're here. You're here in Alaska, bro. I've never been to Alaska.
You know, I spent three summers working in canneries in Alaska.
Did you really?
Yeah, yeah. I spent like a year in Alaska.
And, wow.
In Kenai.
So how did you end up going from, you know, working at Midnight Sun? You have your own brewery. Are you the brewer or are you the owner?
I'm the owner. I do everything myself.
Bottle washer.
So how many guys? How many guys work with you? Let's give us the picture of what town are you in?
I'm in Anchorage.
You're in Anchorage. How many people work for you?
Zero. I don't have any.
Just you. And how big is your brew system?
Well, I actually I work in the same building as another brewery, and they have like this 4-story concrete building, and so I wanted to start a brewery, but I didn't have, you know, a bunch of money. I had enough to, you know, kind of get it started. But the Sleeping Lady Brewery is another brewery here in town, and they have this giant building that's really underutilized, and they had all these rooms in the downstairs below the brewery that they had there already that was just empty, and it was just kind of a throw-all place. And I talked to Gary Clawford, he's the owner, and I said, hey, you know, what do you think about me starting a brew down here? And, you know, I'll pay you rent and rent the brew house from you and then pump the product downstairs. So he said, yeah. And so basically I work on I get about 13 barrels per batch out of the brew system. It's a JV Northwest system. And I basically, you know, pipe some stainless down through the floor, and I ferment everything in wood here, so I have two big 60-barrel oak fooders that are temperature controlled. So I do all my primary fermentation in there, and then from there, beer goes into oak barrels, and that's when the Brettanomyces is added, and then it stays there for another 6 months to a year, and then it's blended back into the wood fooders, and then I add a wine yeast to bottle condition, and then it's bottle conditioned. So the beer actually never touches stainless until it hits the bottling line.
So where do you get the fooders from?
They came from a winery called Harlan Estate in Napa. And they're only 4 years old, and actually got a really good deal on them. I got them for like $6,000 a piece, and I was like, wow, this is awesome. And they're only 4 years old, so the only catch was that they're bigger than the door, so I actually had to disassemble the fooders and then reassemble them in the brewery, which their cooper said I was crazy, but I ended up pulling it off, so there's zero leaks coming out of them, which is nice.
There's a pun there somewhere. I just can't find it.
So
is a what?
A pun.
Well, so just give it a shot.
No. I'm,
so what you're doing?
If you can't take apart your fooder, you can't make beer. What's?
I have no idea yet. By the end of the program,
we've been drinking a lot. Anyway, so what you're doing, that everything on wood and the way you're doing it, that's like a really time consuming. That's a tough way to go when you're first starting out. I mean, like, what made you want to do it, everything on wood, the way that you're doing it?
Well, I started experimenting a lot with Midnight Sun for years, and, you know, that was always my favorite kind of beer to brew. And so I kind of had this idea of really cutting down on the overhead and streamlining it and basically bottling everything. I ended up buying a really nice bottling line that corks and cages, and it does everything for you. So I spent more money on equipment instead of manpower. I have a few friends that come in and help me bottle when I do, but I only bottle like six times a year. But I do like 900 to 1,300 cases per run.
Now you've gotten to the point where this is your main, you know, your main occupation, or, you know, are you trending into it as your main thing?
No, this I do 100%.
There's 100%. Well, I'll tell you, I mean, even if I had a total fail, you know, which I might have on whether or not that beer that I remember in the past was yours. It reminds me a lot of it for, you know, its subtlety and the way all of the elements of it are joined together. A little twinge of acidity, but not too much. A little bit of Brett funk, but not too much. You know, a really nice light weediness and an almost daring lack of hop character. You know, just very much in the background and just enough to hold the whole thing together. I think it's gorgeous.
And this is done in Chardonnay barrel? We're drinking the white out, right? Yeah, white out.
Yeah, Chardonnay barrel, French oak.
It's really nice.
Are you adding any lactobacillus, you know, to give you the acidity, or do you think that's coming from the Brett, or do you think it's coming from whatever is resident in the barrel?
No, all the acidity comes from the Brett right now. I do have some other beers that I'm brewing that are mixed culture, and they have lacto and pedo and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then I also have some beers that that I fermented basically like 5 hours north from here. I took some barrels and I put them in my back of my truck, and I cut these big openings in the tops of them, and then I made some lids for them. And then I brewed a beer, transferred the wort into those, and then I took it up into this place called Solana, Alaska, and I mean, it's in the deep interior. And,
Solana?
We spent a weekend there, and I let the beer open for 2 days, and then we drove it back, and it fermented out fully.
So, he's like, Solana, because Anchorage isn't far enough north.
Yeah.
Right. I've done a wild beer here before as well, so my family's land... actually, my wife's family's land is way up there, so we just decided to go up there and do it and try and see what different kinds of yeast you can get in different areas around Alaska.
Now, right,
and that's something I'm going to continue to do as well.
Well, this time of year, how many hours a day is it dark?
Probably easier to do the light side. we probably have maybe 8 hours of light or something like that. But as it gets darker, we'll go all the way down to you know, 5 hours. But the more north you get, like if you go way up north in Alaska, it's basically nothing. It's dark all the time.
Garrett's thinking the same as me. We're trying to find out, you know, what's unique about your place.
Yeah, no.
We're in New York City right now. It's the Tuesday night. It's 5:30. What time is it there?
1:30.
So 1:30 in the afternoon. So it's like the same as Seattle, right?
No, 1 hour less.
No, 1 hour different.
One hour farther.
50, yeah. 30 there.
Yeah. You know, is there anything that you think that, you know, in any way, and the answer might be, well, actually, no, but is there anything that typifies Alaskan brewing, you know, the same way that you might refer to a West Coast style of IPA or whatever else? Is there anything that tends to tie Alaskan beers together?
I would say not, because none of the breweries up here are anything like the other brewery. Everyone's different, so I would say not. There's definitely, you know, everyone up here has, you know, an adventurous side to how they brew their beers. But, you know, there's also breweries up here that don't, you know, push the envelope or anything. You know, they make mainstream beers, which is great too, as long as you do them good. And so I would say not.
So the other big question for you is, you know, you're distributed here in New York by Dan Shelton, the Shelton Brothers. Which, to me, every time I see a Shelton Brother beer, it means it's quirky, it's handmade or very naturally made, and Dan has a really, you know...
And there are three bottles.
Right. Yeah, you can't get it.
How did you meet Dan, and how did you end up becoming distributed by him? Because, yeah, we called around today, and literally one store I know had four bottles, and no one else has samples, and, you know, it's great to be in demand, but, you know, how did you meet Dan?
Well, Dan actually came up here for the Barley Wine Festival. He actually ships quite a bit of his specialty beers up here from his portfolio to specialty imports. And then I met him at the Barley Wine Festival, and he gave me a bottle of the Oro de Calabaza. And I'm a big Jolly Pumpkin fan, so that's basically how I met him. I didn't talk to him much, you know, during that whole time, but, you know, this was probably two or three years before I started. And then basically when I decided to start this business plan, they were kind of part of it, because I needed someone who could take all of my beer and deal with all the distributors and deal with getting it across the country. I didn't want one state to just have everything. I didn't want to overload one place with the product. So they basically just take the whole batch and then run with it.
Well, I have two questions. One, have you yet had a 3 a.m. argument with Mr. Shelton? And the second question, you will if you have not. It's one of my favorite pastimes. But the second question is, does Dan actually kind of import other American breweries? It's interesting that I think of Dan more as an importer, you know, than as a distributor. But in a way, he's importing beer from Alaska.
Wait a minute. Did I say Dan?
Well, we're talking about Shelton Brothers, yes?
I'm sorry.
I can't have a double fail here. Now, I've only had one. Will? I'm feeling a little bit on edge.
I actually have not met Dan before.
Oh, yeah, if it's Will, you're not going to have an argument with Will. Will, you know. Yeah.
Well, who did you work with?
Which one was it?
What's that?
Was it Dan or Will?
Well, who did you work with from Shelton Brothers?
I haven't met any of the Shelton Brothers before. I've only met Matt Dingus.
Mm. Ah, it was Matt. Okay.
Matt, okay.
Well, you're never going to have an argument with Matt.
So who's Matt? Tell us about Matt.
No, Matt's a great guy. He's easy.
Does he work for Shelton Brothers too?
Yeah, he kind of runs the headquarters and everything now.
So you're saying he's the guy. We're putting you on the spot, Gabe, but it's neat because there's you and there's Jolly Pumpkin. And you know, they're sold through Shelton Brothers, and you know, Garrett's right. I mean, it's almost like you're being imported,
right,
and distributed by them, and that's kind of cool. I mean, you're making really interesting, unique beer. You might as well be making beer from Italy or Belgium now.
I mean, as far as we are away, you know, basically it is imported.
He can see Russia from his porch. Oh, that was
right.
Unfair.
And so, Gabe, how's
Sarah Palin was just in this building the other day.
How's the bar scene up there? You know, the beer scene going on. I've been to, well, not for a while, but I went to Chilcote Charlie's, and but there's also some, and the Alaskan Bush Company, but we won't talk about that. And then, but there's some great brew pubs up there. I remember,
we actually have, I think we have like 24 breweries up here right now.
Wow!
I think we might even have the most breweries per capita in the U.S. I know at one point we did have that, but maybe not now. But
as a state,
Colorado's putting together a rating party. You got to be careful.
And all the different places where you can get great beer, it's awesome. We got all kinds of great bottle shops and great bars to go to drink, you know, awesome beer and you know, Shelton Brothers. Definitely, you know, they send a lot of their specialty stuff up here, you know, all the Cantillons and all the Michelob products, and, you know, the list goes on. So we get all that kind of stuff up here as well.
That's cool, man. I mean,
Dave, how bitter are you feeling about the fact that they're getting all those beers up there? You're having a harder time.
makes me want to go up there.
We're having a hard time figuring out how to get your beers because... We wish you would send it all to here, but we like what we've tried, and we're drinking the whip beer right now. And let's just take a short break. Can you stay on the air with us, Gabe?
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, we'll be back in a few minutes with Gabe from Anchorage on Beer Sessions Radio.
I want to get close to you, baby, and quite all right. Close to you, baby. It's cold hills tonight. Close to you, baby. With the hat on your head. Close to you, baby. You better believe what I said. I want to get close to you, baby. Oh, let me get close to you. I want to get so close to this little girl till she like, don't know what to say or do. Get as close to you, baby, nah, with the sight of your eyes, nah, close to you, baby, nah, as he is to find, close to you, baby, if my egg is to him, nah, close to you, baby, nah, his son is twins. I want to get close to you, baby. Whoa, let me get close to you.
Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Thanks to our sponsor, GreatBrewers.com. If you haven't checked out Beer Cloud, you should check. Have you ever checked it out, Dave?
I have.
What is it?
Because you keep telling me to, so I do.
What is it?
What is it?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Seth, you know what Beer Cloud is?
It's a large, fussy cloud. No, it's so beautiful.
I think you meant iCloud. I'm sorry.
Seth, what is Beer Cloud?
It's an app that allows you to check out different beers and what it, you know, like if you're at a store and you're just overwhelmed, then you can see, you know, like this one, what's it like? And then it'll tell you food pairings and there's different pages on there. And so it's all just a phone app sort of when you're standing there and you maybe feel embarrassed about talking to the guy that's working at the store, you can kind of like do it on your own. Or if you're at a party and you like see something, you're like, oh, what's that? Let me just crack that and take it.
I'm waiting for the compendium cloud. is that coming soon?
A companion cloud? Yeah, okay, just like, little cloud right next to
you. What do you guys have up in Anchorage? Okay, now we're focused. We're here in Anchorage, Alaska. You're at Sleep. What's it called? Sleeping Lady Brewery?
It's in the same building as the Sleeping Lady Brewing Company. Yeah.
So how many more breweries could be in that building? Because maybe we've got some guys in New York who need to move up.
We can ship you some.
Yeah.
there's only one brewer up in that place, too. So
there's room for a couple guys.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll send Brett up there.
Yeah. We're definitely impressed with, Brett says yes. We're definitely impressed with all the work you're doing, hands-on brewer and all that stuff.
And I'd like to know when are you going to come visit us in New York City?
Actually, well, I'm not sure when I'm going to be in New York, but I will be in Boston for the Extreme Beer Fest.
Yeah.
And
are you going to run up to Vermont to see family and stuff?
I don't travel around much, and it's weird because, you know, I'm up here. I don't get to see, you know, what people's reaction is to my beer, and, you know, it's all over the place, and... So I don't get the.
Well, let's tell you straight up.
A lot of the other brewers do. So
Gabe, we have a pretty good panel.
A little bit more.
We have a pretty good panel here. Dave Broderick owns Blind Tiger. Garrett Oliver, noted brewer and beer expert. Seth Wright from Beer Nation TV. We're going to taste your beer right now, and we're going to tell you what we really think of it. So we're drinking the Whip here. What do you guys think of it?
I really like it. I think it's a great beer. I just like the whole barrel aging. You know, like wit is not what I associate with wood, you know, and with Brett or with Chardonnay. But I think it really works. It really kind of just, they both pull together really well. I really like it.
Yeah, you know, kind of the way I brew is, you know, I don't want one thing overcoming another. It's all subtleties. And that's another reason why I don't use much American oak either, because, you know, American oak in certain beers, like lighter ones, can be so obtrusive.
Well, I would posit to you that your beer is not at all extreme. It is, in fact, subtle.
Good one. And
good,
who,
good comment.
Do you put the corks, the caps on your corks?
Do I
he has a caging machine.
You have a, because I'm
I have a caging machine.
I'm trying,
because Jimmy's
trying
having trouble getting it open.
I'm trying to take your cage off your cork.
Your child-proof caps are brilliant.
This could take the whole show.
Entirely foiled.
It's
here.
Only six twists.
Okay. He wouldn't last long in Alaska, I could tell you right now.
Exactly. I have to gnaw his arm off.
What are you doing over there?
I don't know, his caps not great.
Why don't you give it to one of the pros?
Yeah, pass
it around.
Garrett will bite it off.
You have a caging machine that puts the cage on your cap?
There's two cages on it. That's why.
There are two cages on it.
See? Yeah, I have a caging machine, so I notice these things.
Yeah. We got a bottle of Simbad.
We got a double cager.
You have a double cager. So you got
a bottle of Simbad.
Where is the second?
That's pretty cool.
Oh, the second. Yeah, you got to twist it.
Yeah, where's the second tab?
And also, Gabe, I really like your labels, too. Who does your drawings for that?
There's a guy here in town that does them, and then we send them down. They get printed by a company called Trieste down in Portland.
Yeah, it's very distinctive. Wow. I know. So I like the Bitter Monk as well.
But the reason I'm giving you a little attitude about your cap...
It's because we need wire cutters over here right now.
That's your New York feedback, but...
Were there seriously two cages on there?
Yeah,
there are two cages on this one.
Oh wow! You blew
your chance. Now we're moving on.
Got the rogue bottle.
Have you ever had Lost Abbey?
How much is it worth now?
Yeah, double the price.
Right. Gabe, have you ever tried Lost Abbey beers?
Have I had any?
Yeah, Seth, tell us about these. Seth brought in a bottle of Lost Abbey.
I brought in the Serpent Stout from Lost Abbey when I was traveling down in San Diego, California, and I know that they're good, and it was one of those things where I was like, yeah, I'm going to bring it back to the city, I'm not going to drink it, I'm going to wait until a good time, and that was like 2 years ago, and so like I've never tried it, so this is going to be my first try of it as well, so I'm kind of excited about it, but I know that, you know, Lost Abbey does some amazing stuff, and they're connected with Port Brewing, and we did go to Solana Beach's Port Brewing, and it was awesome to see that they, like, have their own stuff, but then they also have the guest taps, which is like so cool. It's like, you know, like we're a brew pub and we do our own thing, but like we know everyone else does good stuff, so we're gonna have like six and six. And then the pizza was good. I was like, gee, I mean, come on.
I think that was the first place I had Pliny the Younger was at a Port Brewing. I mean,
hey guys,
a pizza port.
I'm gonna pull off just for one sec. I'll be right back.
Okay. So Seth, when you travel, are you also making your TV show?
We're definitely filming all the time. I mean, like, I bring my, like, camera wherever I go, and I film. And so, like, I was telling Dave before, he's like, you know, how are things going? Like, I'm like, yeah, you know. He's like, have you been filming recently? I'm like, well, we filmed already a lot. The editing is the hard part. So it's like getting the stuff edited and putting it together in, like, a nice form for people is really what is the time consuming part. Going out there and, like, you know, filming and having an idea takes a couple of hours, because, you know, you interview, you see the stuff, you get all your b-roll, and it's amazing, and then it's like the grind at the computer. And I know some, but I have editors that help me, and so that is the struggle of getting the show out. But, you know, the more people that like it, and the more people that come to me and say, like, oh, I love your show, it just motivates me to stay up later and, like, work harder, you know, like, oh, I can get that edited. I know I can. So, you know, I've done trips to the Northwest and the Southwest, and so, like, all up and down California, and I have a bunch of footage from Seattle and Portland and San Diego and San Francisco. I have not tried the Pliny the Younger, but the elder was like, just, it was like mind blowing. And like, it was like 5 years ago that I went to Santa Rosa, and I was like, the wife was having a mud bath at Calistoga, and I was like, I told my friend, I was like, dude, we got to go over to this place because I heard it's pretty dope. And he's like, all right, what's it called? It's like Russian River. And he's like, all right, we'll check it out. It was like 45 minutes away, and we were just like floored. We're like, oh my god. And so
what is it about Russian River? I mean, I've had some of the beers myself. There's like a cult following. Is it because it's so hard to get? Kind of like Anchorage, where it's so hard to get, where you don't really get to taste enough of it.
Is
the beer really that good?
I don't think it's really that. I mean, if one likes the bigger style of IPA, if you want to call them double IPAs, etc. And by the way, that cork will go. Vinny basically invented that style.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, what really makes that that brewery special, you know, is not just the fact that, you know, that Pliny is great, but that, you know, they are also preeminent in sour beers.
Yeah, the shuns.
When you go into the brew pub, you know, there's a room, you know, which is basically the bug room, and it's a bunch of carboys that are bubbling with all kinds of hideous-looking things going on. And Vinny knows more about this than probably anybody else in the United States. And, you know, we have a project going on at the brewery right now where we took some fermenting wine from natural fermentations locally. We dosed it into some wort, and we have a completely spontaneous fermentation going, which has no laboratory yeast in it. And now on the top of it, we formed this horrible looking crust. I take a picture of it on my cell phone and I send it to Vinny. And I'm like, Vinny, this looks like the dark side of the moon. You know, what's going on here? And he gives me an exposition on, you know, don't worry, this is the way a lot of these wild yeast strains look, you know, when they're forming their pellicles, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, he's out there not just as a brewer, but as a resource. You know, and for the Oxford Companion to Beer, he wrote the piece on sour beers and on oak. And as a former winemaker, brings to what he's doing that sensibility as well. I mean, so, you know, I think that he's a brewer that just about any brewer in the United States looks up to. And I've seen his empty bottles in the brewing office at Orval. And that says more than you... than almost anything else ever would.
I think he has a lot more fun.
He helped me out quite a bit on this project, actually, and he actually shared some of his critters with me that I've adopted into my brewery, not in these Brett beers, but in the sour beer production side of it.
Are you worried at all about bringing bugs in? You know, like,
well, that's all I do is bugs.
Yeah,
bugs are us.
That's true. I guess
I don't make anything but, you know, Brett beers and sour beers.
Got it. So then it makes it easy.
Vinny, by the way, is not allowed into many of the local wineries. I mean, and they're quite serious about it. Oh,
the wineries hate Brett.
They like him, but they're like, sorry, dude, you cannot come in here.
Take off your clothes.
Yeah.
But I think that he now, I mean, I think he's more intrigued by the barrel-aged stuff that he's doing, you know, than the hoppy stuff. I think the hoppy stuff pays the bills and allows him to go into his laboratory and do all the crazy stuff that he really wants to do. So,
yeah. But to be able to do both really equally well, I think is a certain sign of well-roundedness. And I think that most brewers, in some way, shape, or form, would say they probably want to be Vinny when they grow up.
Well, actually, our last episode that I'm working on editing now, we were in Philadelphia, and if anyone knows anything about Russian River, the only place you can get it pretty much, now I think they're in Colorado, but pretty much for a long time was California only, but you could get it in Pennsylvania, and it's like, well, what happened there? And so Monk's Cafe, Tom Peters, he says that he told Vinny, like, look, you're going to send it to me, and you know, that was a long time ago when Monk's opened. And so when we did an interview with him, he cracked open Consecration, and it was one of the first. I had been to Santa Rosa and had some of the hoppy stuff, but hadn't really had a lot of the shuns. And so, you know, when he cracked that open and they're sour, and I was just like, wow, okay, you know, he knows what he's doing. But yeah, it was pretty cool. So we added a little Russian River in our, even though we don't.
Philadelphia is very lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the sour beers have to be kept separate from the Brett beers?
Well, I think the sour beers, you know, to some extent are the Brett beers, but I mean, Brett does not in itself actually produce much in the way of sourness, you know, almost none unless you go 100%. So, you know, most people are using another culture, you know, usually a lactobacillus to give them a, you know, a sour portion. And one thing I was going to ask Seth is, as you go around, people often ask me, what trends do you see, et cetera, et cetera. What do you see? Do you see sour beers possibly making something similar to what they refer to on the West Coast as the lupulin shift, where you have a sour shift? People are willing to jump over to acidity, or do you think that it's going to, you know, that it seems to be staying kind of in a relatively small, tight area among aficionados?
Well, I mean, I'm definitely noticing it more, and I feel like the heavy hoppy beers that have this intense flavor a couple of years ago, people were kind of like, that's too much for me. But then it's the palate slowly grows to it. And like, I had, you know, one of Scott Vaccaro's Cuvée de Castleton's, like one of his first ones. And I was kind of like, whoa, that's like really, you know, like pretty intense. But now it's just like, you start to really enjoy it. It's like, you know, a Sour Patch Kid. Like, how do they sell those? It's because you taste it and you go, that's so good. You know, like, well, that's like, you make that face, but then it's like, I want more of it. And you know, yeah. So it's like the sour
and,
thing.
Well,
I think,
later
I
batches are also mellower, you know.
Yeah,
and,
but I think, yeah, like if people come into the into Blind Tiger and Jimmy's 43 and go, we'll go through the entire sour list. You know, we'll just work their way through it. So, and brewers in particular will come in and work their way through.
The other thing,
so.
Well, I will say this as someone who's a, you know, a pub owner and interacting with the customers, just when you think that people forget about a style, they come and asking for it. So, you know, people want sours, but they still want really good IPAs. They still want the session beers. And of course, they still want, you know, high-gravity Belgians. You know, so you just have to almost have a really well-curated list of beers.
These damn customers, they want, they everything.
Want everything. They want
they
choice.
Want everything.
But that's exciting, you know. So I can have, you know, some really good, you know, triples and doubles from Belgium. I have to have some sour beers. You know, I have to have good IPAs. I have to have, like, a nice unfiltered German lager, you know. And that's kind of cool. It's cool that people are
but you have
so
to have unfiltered. A nice unfiltered German lager. What are you carrying? Well, I mean, besides like Mars Ungespundet. I mean, what else?
Mars Ungespundet is my style breaker. I love that. These days, I've actually been selling Arkebrau, which isn't people like it. Have you had Arkebrau?
I have not had Arkebrau.
It's nice. It's by Count Arco, but it's
Count Arco
unfiltered lager. It's good. Nice. It's a Schwickel.
Well, it's Schwickel by Count Arco.
Means the key. Only the owner of the keys can get this beer.
Only the owner of the keys can go.
It sounds like
but
a
yes,
cereal.
Mars Ungespundet is the category breaker, of course.
So, well, I like the fact
but
that...
But again, I can never get... That's another Shelton Brothers beer I can never get.
Yeah.
I want to make a beer called Count Arco.
I like the fact that, Gabe, you've got three style things that are really popular right now. Barrel-aged, sour, and hops in the Bitter Monk all going on at the same time, which is... I mean, that's basically the triple threat.
Yeah, it's the whole gamut. I mean, none of these beers, surprisingly, you know, no test batches or any of that kind of thing. Just kind of went for it and kind of hoped for the best. And there's a little bit of pressure there, too, because, you know, Shelton Brothers, when I did ask them, you know, before I did anything, they committed to basically everything I make. And so I hadn't made any of those beers yet, and I just had to go for it. You know, with barrel-aged beers, you don't know how exactly they're going to taste until they're done. And, you know, that's 6 months to a year later.
Do you do a lot of blending?
I do, yeah, for sure. I definitely like to have some balance there. I don't like... In my younger days, I liked the sweeter beer, more body, but... I've been leaning more towards into making drier, more quaffable, but really complex beers. I mean, the Bitter Monk is definitely, it's aggressive, 100 IBUs. It has a dryness, but there's a little bit of body in there, too, to balance it out. And then you get all the shard flavors and the oak, and it's an intense beer for sure.
And Garrett, I know that you, I actually was lucky enough to try the wine beer that you made on the wine lees.
Oh, the Crochet Rouge, yeah.
Yeah, that was an incredible. Why don't you tell us about that? That was amazing.
Well, we have we've got a whole series of those going on with our friends at the Red Hook Winery. Abe Scherner, who's probably the premier natural winemaker in the United States, and many brewers don't think about this, but wine traditionally didn't have yeast added. And really, adding yeast to wine fermentations has only really become prevalent in the last 40 or 50 years. Totally different than beer, where a couple of hundred years ago, 300 or 400 years ago at least, some sort of house yeast became the prevalent thing, not in winemaking. So the big difference between wine and beer, is that one is sterilized. Beer, wort, is sterilized by being boiled. So, the terroir, part of the terroir is the flavor of the wild yeast. And, these guys are doing really natural fermentations. And when they're done, they're racking off of that yeast and giving it to us. And we are aging beers out on it. The tricky part, though, is that, these are pretty small amounts of wine, pretty small amounts of lees. And lees is the sediment, including the yeast, that comes off of these wine fermentations. So, we're making the coolest stuff that we've ever made. The problem is, how can you make more of it enough that you might actually be able to give somebody some, rather than having only a few hundred cases?
So are you putting that onto the just straight-up wort after boil, or?
Well, we have just started doing that, but before what we had done is we have a 9% beer called Local One, which is sort of somewhere around a triple Belgian strong golden, aged it in barrels for 9 months on these lees, and the beer is soured, funkified, and turned into something entirely different and not recognizable from the original, and we were like, wow, we need to get more of this stuff. But
they don't have that problem with the wines when they finish out.
Well, for them it's not a problem because they want funky, interesting wines. The natural wine movement is very strong, especially in the Northeast. There are places like the Ten Bells in New York City where you will go and drink nothing but naturally fermented everything. Hundreds of wines, great. Dozens of ciders. Beers, everything. No lab yeast in the house. It's a great thing to have a place that's dedicated to that. And so what we're doing now is taking their wines as they're fermenting, adding them to wort, and we hope that eventually, we're going to get a bunch of barrel fermentations going and eventually do completely spontaneous beers or, beers that have no laboratory yeast, where we've used the wineries as a focal point, for the yeast of the countryside. So we'll see how it goes.
Garrett, I'm hosting an event in a few weeks, Battle of the Belgians, December 17th. And I know that we're getting from Brooklyn Brewery, Cuvée Noir.
How do the Belgians feel about the name Battle of the Belgians? Because they've had a lot of battles.
Well, because last year I did Battle of the Belgians.
They're a little touchy about it.
This is a good one. And I really thought I was going to showcase the American breweries making Belgian-style beers. That's how I actually got to meet Wendy Littlefield from Van Bergen DeWolf. She said, honey, listen to me. The Belgian beers are great, and we import good beers.
You're going to get hurt. So, you're going to battle Wendy. You're going to get hurt.
Now we're friends, Van Bergen DeWolf. But... What is Cuvée Noir?
Cuvée Noir is actually it doesn't have a style. It was from last year. It was a draft beer. It was kind of almost like a Belgian idea of a strong stout. I wanted to explore the difference between the strong abbeys that use Belgian candy sugar syrup for their caramelized flavors, and then substitute those out for roasted malts as you would use in German and British beers, but still use that same structure of relatively dry and going with the yeast strains that you have there. We've recently aged that beer in Elijah Craig 12-year-old barrels, resulting in a beer called Cuvée Elijah, which is one of my favorite things we have as a ghost bottle at the brewery, a beer that we don't release, but we will pour for you if you show up in the right place at the right time. you know, we don't make you get online or anything or pay a lot of money. We're like, well, you can have it for free, but if you're not willing to come have a conversation, then you can't have any.
Conversation beers. All right.
Yeah. Conversation.
This is a great one, and I know we're going to have this group back again soon, and including you, Gabe. We hope to have you on the show again.
Maybe in person.
Our time is running down.
Hey, appreciate it, guys. Hey, this is my first interview, actually. So
you're awesome.
Congratulations.
It's good, and it forces us. We tracked down your beer in New York City, and we drank two bottles tonight. So I'd like to thank our sponsors at GreatBrewers.com who've helped to make bring this podcast to you tonight. Thanks to Good Beer Seal as well. Thanks to Garrett, Dave, Seth, and Gabe for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee and Bree O'Connor, and guest coordinator Brett Thompson. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
Out of the tree of life,
I'm beyond your
ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.